Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, April 1st. Happy Fool's Day! I didn't get a fool, whatever, a fool, and I didn't get one. I mean, I guess I'm too old. I remember looking forward to this day in school, but anyway, happy Fool's Day. April Fool's Day to everyone, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, and we love hearing from you, so please join us to listen in or ask questions by dialing 347-857-2710. We are live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific Time, and you can also contact me, email me with any questions or comments to goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. That's goodvibe, V-I-B, like Betty E, goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you because we have an exciting guest today, and she is back by popular demand. The phones have been going off the hook. The letters have been coming in. And everyone, she is here, so tune in. You know her from her online column for Actors, Inc. magazine called On the Couch with Dr. D, and she's getting ready to launch a teleconference for men only called Hey Jane, I'm Dick. I love that. Getting past the small talk. So please give a warm, comfy shoesies welcome to my dear friend, Dr. Davis K. Brimberg. Hi, Davis.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's so nice to have you back. I know it was a big success the last time you were on, and we've had a lot of emails and comments about your appearance on the show, and people have been wanting you back. So we aim to please here at Comfy Shoesies.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me back.
It's welcome. I got you back. You are back. You are back. You're live, and you're back. And I think I'm going to give, the word for our show today, I think, is potential. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you if you could please define performance anxiety. What does that mean?
Well, I specialize in helping performers in my private practice, actors, public speakers, test takers, athletes, virtually anything where there's a performance and an evaluation. The phrase performance anxiety is often connected to sex and sexual dysfunction.
Great. It's going to be one of those shows. I love it.
Yes, it's going to be one of those shows, exactly. So I tell people that I specialize in helping performers. Now, in terms of performance anxiety, in that phrase, how it's used in helping men specifically with things like erectile dysfunction, that's different. It is somewhat related in the sense that the person feels and often fears as if their performance is being graded and that they're somehow not measuring up.
Would you be able to help someone who had sexual issues, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sorry. Absolutely. It's something that I have helped people with. But it's a bit different when I say that I specialize in helping performers.
Right.
I am referring to actors and test takers and public speakers and athletes and things of that nature. But in my practice, and I have two locations for my practice. I have one in West Hollywood and one in North Hollywood. But in my practice, I see people who have all types of concerns, issues that are maybe totally unrelated to things like performing, things like relationship problems or anxiety and depression. And in those kinds of sessions, yes, people do absolutely ask me about sexual issues.
Well, let's give a more in-depth example about what you do for performers. So let's take actors as an example.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take maybe actors and then as a creative side and then a business professional. So as an actor or someone who's creative, how would you help them deal with reaching their potential?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I want to help them with is understanding what are the issues that are coming up for them specifically around areas like auditions. Auditions are a different animal than giving a stage performance, let's say. For some actors, the audition itself is more difficult than the actual play performance or even filming. So I want to help get specific about where the concerns are coming from exactly. And then in addition to that, I give them very specific techniques that they can use, some actual concrete tips that they can use in addressing their anxiety.
You know, it's so interesting. We have a caller here. Let me see if our caller would like to say something or if our caller would just like to listen in to our lovely conversation. So we'll see who our caller is. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Dr. Brimberg. Would you like to ask a question? Okay. I think our caller would just prefer to listen in, and that's fine, too.
Absolutely fine.
That is absolutely fine. We'd like to have anyone call in just to listen or call in to ask questions. So getting back to what we're talking about, actors and trying to reach their potential, let's say actors and business professionals, is there a common thread in any one of these categories?
Yes, there's the common theme of what I would describe as evaluation anxiety. There is the common theme in which when the person feels as if they are being evaluated, whether it's literally like in an audition or whether it's maybe even not quite as literal, they feel as if they are not measuring up. They feel like they are not actually meeting the expectations of whomever the grader is. And what happens is that the person starts to get into their head more and more as they're talking or as they're giving the performance, and they start evaluating themselves to a very strong degree instead of just feeling free in the actual performance where they're able to really actualize their potential.
Well, don't you agree that in any type of performance, there's always, you get the jitters, everybody gets nervous.
Yes, yes.
So how does that differ from an anxiety that
prevents you? Great question. The critical difference is whether the anxiety interferes with the person's performance, whether it really gets in the way and hinders them in that moment. Now, for a lot of performers, whether they're actors or public speakers or test takers or athletes, a lot of them, the second they start to feel nervous, it's, oh, my gosh, oh, no, this is terrible, oh, no, something awful is going to happen. Instead of reinterpreting the experience of, okay, I'm nervous, this is something that's important to me, I'm doing something that I love, I'm doing something that I value, the nervousness says I'm alive and well, and I'm doing something that's important to me. And one of the major things that I do to help people is to reinterpret the anxiety and to use the anxiety as fuel, to use the anxiety to their advantage, because all of that anxiety can be used to their advantage.
Well, I know someone very famous who has performance anxiety, and I think most people might know this, is Barbara Streisand.
Yes, she's absolutely.
And so how would you, you know, hear somebody in the public eye, how do you, obviously, because you don't have a one-on-one with her, you don't know the specifics, but in a general sense, why is she able to perform with that anxiety?
I don't know exactly, because I haven't met Babs, right? I don't know what Ms. Streisand is like as a person. I only know her as the performer, and of course know her from a distance. But if I had the opportunity to meet with her in a session, we would talk about what happens for her specifically before, during, and after performances. You want to look at what are the pieces that happen in the days or even weeks before the performance, and what is what's happening in the moment, and how does she deal with it after? Because for a lot of performers who struggle with anxiety that interferes, they even struggle with it after the event is done.
There's residuals, you mean?
Yes, they can ruminate on it. That can be a part of the picture. But certainly one of the things that I think is a critical piece for somebody at her level is the kind of expectation. She has, of course, this phenomenal reputation of being this extraordinary singer. People pay hundreds of dollars to come and see her performances. So there is a tremendous expectation on her shoulders that she is going to deliver a stellar performance.
But don't you think a lot of people either place that expectation on themselves or other people place that on them? And so,
well, what happens in the performance realm is projection. The person takes their own feelings and their own issues about who they are as a person and as a performer, and they project them onto the audience.
That's very interesting. So how does being, let's say, an actor, or somebody who performs, let's say, an actor, an athlete, a musician, versus someone like a business professional or a public speaker who they are doing not necessarily a quote-unquote performance, but they are giving a speech? Or
mm-hmm.
How does that differ in the anxiety? Anything?
Well, one of the things that's amazing about athletes is that athletes make mistakes. Even the highest level athletes make mistakes during their performances, and they continue on and they do even better in spite of them. So, for example, if you look at basketball players, they miss shots, they make bad passes that don't get received properly. All sorts of events happen on the basketball court. The athlete has to have the ability of shrugging off that moment and moving on. If an athlete were to focus on their mistakes and really, really stay focused on those things, they would not be able to complete their goal. They would not be able to go and make more baskets and make their win.
It's also a mental process, because I want to share with our listeners that your current online column on Actors, Inc. deals with meditation. And I know
you
spoke about Phil Jackson, the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, and how he conducts a meditation for his players,
mm-hmm.
and to focus in on that mental aspect, that that's as important as the performance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a raw, natural talent that all performers must possess. And it's somebody like me that's going to help that person get to another level. But ultimately, the raw talent, of course, does have to be there. But anybody who's a performer has to be able to move on from glitches or moments of mistakes and to not focus on them. They inevitably happen. I mean, getting back to Ms. Streisand, I don't know if that is an issue for her, but it's a very, very common theme that happens among all performers, which is right in the middle of something, some little mistake, some little glitch happens, and the person starts focusing on that, and they get into their own head, and it prevents them from really getting to the next place.
I also think, even just from my own past experience, that if you focus on like you pick a goal of maybe not shining, but of just being you.
Yes.
And because when you're yourself, when you allow that to happen, then the goal you have in mind automatically is, because you can relax, you can be yourself, you can be funny, you can be calm, you can be whatever and whoever you are, and the end result just happens. But when you focus on that end result of performing, of being good, or of being funny, or whatever, then I think that's when the anxiety can present itself.
Absolutely. And one of the things, too, that happens for performers is that when the anxiety hits, they find themselves getting out of the present. In other words, they become so focused on the future, or they become so focused on the past, that they're not really able to stay present. And the more that somebody can stay present in the task that they're doing, let's say when they're doing an acting performance, the more they're going to enjoy it, the freer they're going to feel, the more comfortable they're going to be able to be to get into that character. Same thing goes with athletes. Athletes have to let whatever mistake happened in the past, let it go, whether it happened 5 minutes ago, 5 years ago, 5 hours ago. That's done. They have to stay in the moment, because when they stay in the moment, they're able to excel at their higher levels.
I think that's most challenging.
It's very
challenging
difficult.
Aspect of anything, of staying in that moment, of a sense of vulnerability, if you will.
It's very, very difficult. But I find that being able to stay in the present as much as possible is something that really helps people in general, whether they're dealing with addiction issues or anxiety or depression or relationship issues or anything. Really anything at all. And it's not easy. I'll certainly be the first to admit it. But it's when we get into the past and focus on that, or get excessively focused on the future, that's when a lot of problems tend to happen.
Yeah. When does someone know they've reached their potential?
I don't know. That's a fantastic question.
I'm 2 for 2, ladies and gentlemen. 2 fabulous questions so far.
2 fabulous questions. You know, it's perhaps ultimately there is the potential that maybe we're constantly striving for, and that's what's pushing us forward. And I think that when you're feeling good and successful at what you're doing, and you're feeling as if it's rewarding, and if you feel like you have a sense of play and fun at what it is that you're doing, that seems to be an indication that you're really hitting your potential. The ultimate potential in us, I don't know if we reach that.
I think it's something we always strive for. I think a lot of people want, quote-unquote, perfection, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's not reachable in what we think of as perfect, because we're imperfect on a certain level, and we keep striving, and I think you're right. You grow. You're different every day, and so that makes your ability to reach your potential different each time, and it goes in, I don't know, can go in a straight path, an S kind of a form. You never know. So your explanation of it is right. I don't know if you really ever, but how you describe what it must feel like to know that you're in the right zone.
Mm-hmm. And I want to help all the people that I work with, regardless of what issues they come with, and you know, they come with all sorts of issues, whether it's performance or relationships or. But I want to help people to feel empowered and to feel as if they're growing. That is something that's very important to me, and it's so rewarding to help people to feel as if they're getting to a much better place in their life.
Absolutely, and I think your specialty just is the stepping stone to other things. It's not necessarily that one thing, performers or performance anxiety, however you want to call it, but family issues, I don't know. Everything is all connected.
It's all connected. it's absolutely all connected. And in terms of my work, I work with people in individual sessions as well as couples and family sessions and groups. And now in approximately a month, I'm going to have this teleconference, which I'm very excited about.
How did you come up with the name? I love it. Hey, Jane, I'm sick. Getting past the small talk.
Yeah, it's a fun title. I want all of the groups and the teleconferences that I do, I want the titles to be fun, to be lighthearted. Yes, of course, there's all sorts of serious issues that people come up with, but and I certainly don't want to minimize that. But I come from all of this from a wellness perspective. I'm not focusing on the psychopathology. And certainly, hey, Jane, I'm Dick.
It's just right to the point. And I know you have a similar group therapy for women only called All...
No Dicks, All Janes.
No Dicks, All Janes. So,
yes.
I can't wait to see what you're going to have for Spot. Gotta get Spot in there.
Yeah, I was thinking of Spot earlier today. I thought, you know, Spot's getting left out. Eventually, at some point, he'll have to show up.
Here's an idea, people and their pets.
Exactly.
No, truly. I mean, I love pets. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to send the wrong message out there. I love pets, but I guess I don't understand some people who just take it one step further with their pets.
Well, yes, that's in another place.
that's in a completely other place. So, I besides these two, I know you offer other types of group therapy. What do you offer?
Yes, I do. Although right now the teleconference is much more in the forefront. That's what's going to happen next. The groups will happen later on. But in terms of this teleconference, it's going to happen Sunday, May 2nd,
okay,
from 6 to 7 p.m. And that time is according to Pacific time.
And how do people sign on to the teleconference?
Well, the really nice thing about it is that it is anonymous. So a person can, they can call in and just listen, like this lovely caller who's
right,
listening right now.
Where do they call? Where do they call to listen in? How do they participate?
Well, what they'll do is they need to contact me if they want to be a part of it, and they will pay the fee through PayPal through my website. And once they've done that, they'll receive an access code, and they'll have the phone number and the access code to call in for the teleconference.
Okay, and then they can find out more about this teleconference on your website, which is Dr. Dr. Davis, D-A-V-I-S-K, Brimberg, BRIMBERG.com, drdaviskbrimberg.com. So all this information that you're hearing today from my lovely guest is on her website. That's fabulous. That's wonderful. So you can incorporate probably a lot of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
more than
what will happen is I'm going to be providing concrete tips that deal with how to approach women, how to ask for dates, how to do something that I call manning the date. I will also be discussing sex, facts, techniques, questions, answers. Everything will be anonymous.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I think that's a great – I like that. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think both the male and female sex experience the same challenges in relationships and meeting somebody, or does one sex have more of a difficult time than the other?
Huh. Well,
is this my third good question?
Yes, absolutely. I think it depends on what you're shopping for.
I'm gathering from this hey Jane, I'm Dick, it's the initiation.
Yes.
It's the hello. So do you think, you know, it probably depends on the person, right? There isn't really one pat answer.
It depends on the person. Men, of course, have the burden of being the one who's in the position of taking the lead, of the one who is initiating contact, approaching the woman, asking for dates, leading the date on all of that. And I say the burden because it can feel like that. But ultimately, if the person is comfortable in the position of being the leader, then it's not the burden. And men also, and women, I think, need to ask themselves what it is that they're shopping for. Are they interested in light, casual dating where not much emotional depth is happening? Well, that's something very different than somebody who's really interested in finding a life partner, somebody who they can ultimately marry and, or not necessarily marry. I mean, it could be people
who committed relationship.
Who want a committed relationship, but who don't necessarily mean marriage.
I think it's also about, here's a performance.
Yeah.
In another avenue where probably more, I don't know, I guess it's maybe equal. Oh, my God, here's a cute guy or a girl. I want to say hi, but I don't want to sound stupid. The dialogue that one has.
The internal monologue that gets in people's way.
Exactly, exactly. And by the time someone makes a decision to act, that opportunity might be gone.
Mm-hmm. And more often than not, it's the man who's having all of that internal dialogue, much more than the woman, because the man is in the position of asking for dates and approaching women and putting themselves out there and risking the possibility of being rejected.
But don't you think a lot of the young people today are taking the lead more so than the men? I mean, what about women who take that first step?
Well, it can confuse things. If a woman wants a very masculine man, it can confuse things if she's approaching him. Because by approaching him, it's putting her in the more masculine position.
Well, she's just taking the initiative. That doesn't mean maybe a guy is shy. Or maybe she just says hello. You know, she sees somebody and says hello,
mm-hmm.
and starts the conversation, and then the man might then ask for her number. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
She might start the dialogue, mm-hmm. because I don't know. This is a very interesting topic. How do you wait for someone to approach you, or do you go after what you want? That doesn't
right.
mean that the man that you are going after is emasculated because of it.
Well, it can change the tone, and it has the potential of confusing things. And something that I emphasize and will emphasize in this teleconference is for the man to take the lead. Most women, even in 2010, most women do want to have a man who takes the lead, who is very considerate of their feelings and very kind to them, but who is the one who is approaching them, the man taking the lead in terms of knowing where to go on that date, taking the lead sexually, all sorts of things.
I think because the woman wants to be pursued.
Women want to be pursued. And it doesn't matter how much money women make and how empowered they are in their job. When it comes to sex, romance, love, women want to be pursued. They want to be cherished.
Amen, sister. Amen. Amen out there. Hallelujah.
And so the man who's going to be taking the lead and being in that leader position, but who's able to also strike the balance of being mindful of their feelings and cherishing who they are, is going to get very far with whoever the woman is.
I know. It doesn't get any easier, it seems, the dating process. Each generation has its own hang-ups or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. That is absolutely true.
Well, it sounds like you have the key or several keys to helping men, at least.
Well, I provide very concrete tips. For example, something I tell men who have come to me with questions about how to approach women and what to do in these scenarios. Something I tell them is when you get to a party, some kind of social gathering, and you see a woman who you really want to talk to, who you'd really like to maybe take out on a date, do not approach her first. When you get to that room and you see her, focus on talking to three or four women who are in there and warm up. Use that as the stretching and feel confident and feel as if you were warmed up so that by the time that you get to the woman who you really want to talk to, that you feel ready and that you feel confident to do that.
That's a good tip. that's a very, you know, every little thing helps, and it's all about being comfortable in your own shoes.
Yes, absolutely. Being comfortable in your own shoes, and that is, I think that's the overall theme of what I help people with.
I think that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You have done some teaching in the past. You have taught at Pepperdine and also at the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine. And now you have a thriving private practice.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts, teaching versus private practice? Do you love both of them? Would you like to do more of one or the other?
I do love both of them, and I find them both very rewarding, and rewarding in different ways. I really do feel that I'm much more focused right now on my private practice, and that is really my emphasis. And I'm sure that I will continue to teach in a very part-time capacity, but I'm very focused on helping people in my private practice right now.
That's great. Earlier you mentioned you have two locations,
yes.
One in West Hollywood and the other in North Hollywood. Do you have an affinity for Hollywood?
Yes.
Is one the west side of the street, the other is the north side of the street? Is that how it works?
Exactly.
We'll give out that information towards the end of the show so people who are in North Hollywood, which is the valley part of Los Angeles, versus West Hollywood, which is over the hill, as we like to call it, in the west side of town, can contact you, make it convenient for you. I find it very interesting. You mentioned earlier that you see many patients with many different concerns. What do you think in the years that you've been in private practice, what do you think is one of the main concerns for most of your patients? Why do they come to you?
I think a theme that comes to mind is not feeling fulfilled in what they're doing, whether it's their profession or in their relationships. I think that is a very big theme.
And are most people willing to open up, or do you often have difficulty in getting information from your patients?
It depends. Some people are extremely open. They walk in within 5 minutes. They've easily settled into the session. They're ready to go, and they're getting in deep in the material. Other people, it takes them a little bit of time to warm up and to feel comfortable and to really go there in depth. And I'm open and flexible to however the person is wanting to proceed. I really do believe that in helping people to feel that they're the ones who are most aware of who they are. Yes, I have a PhD, and I went to school for a very long time, and I did a lot of training, and I know what I'm doing clinically. But ultimately, I do not live in their head. And so they have the deepest understanding of who they are more than anybody else.
That, you know, I think you've hit upon something. That would be nice, to have your own personal psychologist in your head.
That would be nice.
You know, you could say, you know, rent on an office. You can be in people's head and tell them what to do mentally and da-da-da-da. That would be beautiful.
That would be nice.
That would be a very interesting concept. And I guess for people that do take, that perhaps have never had therapy on any level before, coming to see you for the first time may be daunting. So that is courageous enough.
It's very courageous. And I always tell this to my students, the best way of understanding therapy is to be a client yourself. It gives you a much deeper understanding and appreciation for what clients experience. They are in an incredibly vulnerable position, and there's no better way of understanding that and really, really feeling that empathically than have already been through that yourself.
Very true, very true. And I know that in your field of study, psychology, you had a mentor that guided you through the ins and outs, the ups and downs of your psychological career.
Yes, absolutely.
How important was having a mentor for you?
Extremely important to have somebody who I admire, who I can ask questions to, whose opinion I truly value, and who has my best interests and my client's best interests always in mind. Somebody who's able to guide certain decisions. It's been extraordinarily helpful.
Where would you suggest, if somebody was looking for such a person, a mentor, where would you suggest someone go?
Well, you can get a supervisor. There are clinicians who see clients, let's say, but who are also psychologists themselves. And they use the therapy hour instead as a supervision hour.
No, I'm not necessarily saying in psychology, but I'm saying in any other industry. Well, if somebody is looking for guidance in accounting or business, where would you suggest somebody go to find that?
Well, I think the first thing I would recommend is really opening your eyes up to the people around you who may have extraordinary knowledge in certain areas, and being open to the fact that the different people in your life have all sorts of things to teach you, and that there may be somebody who's capable and interested in being in that mentor role for you. They may even be in your life already.
That's very true. I think we tend to look outside ourselves first, instead of looking within, meaning your Rolodex and seeing the people that you know, your circle of influence. And you'd be surprised that if you do delve into that, the treasures that lie within.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm loving it.
Is our listener, the person who called in, are they still on the line with us?
No, they have left the line. We have another caller, but I think this caller is just a listener. But we love that. We just love to reach those people live and hear what they have to say. I know if they want to call in, we've had a lot of response. The switchboard here has been going crazy.
Nice.
You mentioned sex. You said sex early on in the show. That's always a winner.
Well, people have been doing it literally since the beginning of time.
That's right. How do you and I get here? Someone had sex. I have to admit it.
Absolutely.
I am the product of sex.
Well, sex is about celebrating life.
Absolutely. It's about love, loving each other.
Connecting to another person.
Absolutely. Exactly. How do you think your work with your patients, we were talking about you feel you empower your patients. How does your work empower your patients? That's
well,
like, that was like a double entendre. Did you hear that? I just heard it. patients, with the people that come to see you, and the PATIENCE.
Well, I help my clients to feel empowered. I try to do that every session in some capacity. A lot of people, they'll go to see a therapist and they want the therapist to give them answers to a certain problem that they're going through, like whether they should break up with their girlfriend or whether they should quit their job, things like that. It's not really how I see my role. I see my role as helping the person to discover their issues and overcome whatever their issues are so that they can feel more empowered to make better choices for themselves. It's not really my job to tell them what they should or should not do. But I do see my job as helping them to discover what they want and what they want to do and what feels best for them.
If someone is looking to get into therapy for the very first time, what tips can you give our listeners? Looking for a therapist, what signs do you look for?
A wonderful place to start is the website Psychology Today. On Psychology Today, you will see a whole series of practitioners there. You'll see their picture as well as their profile, which will give you information on not only things like where they went to school and what their training is, but also the therapist provides a statement, which is their chance to tell you who they are. And so in that, you can get a sense of what the clinician may be like. And you can do it by putting in your zip code, and it'll show you the clinicians that are in your area. That would be the first place to start. Once you've connected with the person and you're now in session with them, after the session is over, the thing that I would encourage people to think about is how comfortable they felt in that room with that person. Did they really feel listened to? Did they really feel as if this person was empathic with them, that a strong rapport, even though it's initial, but that a strong rapport was developed? And do they feel as if this therapist has the ability and the willingness to really understand them and to really, really get them and connect with them?
Those are good tips, because I think a lot of people might not know where to start. What do I look for? Do I want a male or a female?
Mm-hmm.
A certain age? Do I want somebody younger who can understand my feelings at my age, who is more simpatico or more of a father/mother figure? And
mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of dynamics, a lot of things involved in making that decision. So that is very helpful about Psychology Today. I cannot believe we spoke about everything about Psychology Today, and we're almost out of time. And before we go, Davis, I want to give our listeners the address of your two locations. The West Hollywood office is located at 9255 Sunset Boulevard, Suite 512, Los Angeles 90069, and your North Hollywood office is 11136 Chandler, Chandler Boulevard, Suite 228, North Hollywood, California 91601. And again, any questions or information that you need can be found on Davis Brimberg's website, which again is www.drdavisbrimberg.com. And you can also give her a jingle at 310-467-9760. Davis, this has been fabulous.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for having me on your show. It's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate your taking the time to have me on today.
Absolutely. I'm going to follow up with you on Hey, Jane, I'm Dick. I think I'm going to be saying that for a lot. Hey, Jane, I'm Dick. Let's get past the small talk. It's going to be, I think that's a wonderful way to have men get started feeling comfortable and definitely finding someone that they can share their life with, even if it's just to getting to know somebody on a casual basis. It's just wonderful. So thank you so very much for joining me. And please, listeners, join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes. This is Lauren Leibowitz.